All right, folks, buckle up, because by popular demand, we're going deep into The Catcher in the Rye.
Ooh, yeah, diving into the world of angst and phonies, huh?
Exactly. And we've got some great sources to guide us.
Wham on me.
Well, we've got excerpts from this collection of academic essays.
Sounds intense.
It is, kind of, but really insightful, too. We also have some summaries from lit charts.
Okay, to keep us grounded.
Yeah, and get this, we found some really cool comparisons to Dune and conspiracy theory.
Wait, what? Holden Caulfield and giant sandworms?
I know, right? Sounds crazy, but trust me, there are some intriguing connections there, and don't worry.
You're not going to bore us with a straight plot summary.
Nope. We're digging deeper, uncovering what makes this book tick, why it still matters today, and yeah, how it connects to those seemingly random things.
Sounds like a plan. Let's get into it.
Okay, so, Holden Caulfield.
Oh boy, everyone's got an opinion about him.
Right, but is he just a grumpy teenager? I mean, our sources suggest there's more to him than that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's definitely cynical, that's for sure, that phony label he throws around. But that cynicism comes from somewhere.
Like, deep down, he's hurting.
Yeah. The sources really emphasize that. He's dealing with the loss of his younger brother, Allie. And the adult world just seems to confirm all his worst fears.
Like it's all fake and meaningless.
Right. And that quote, life is a game that one plays according to the rules. Remember that one?
Yeah, it's simple, but...
it's loaded. Right.
Mm.
When you think about it from Holden's perspective, it's like pure irony. All these adults blindly following rules.
He's not buying it.
Not one bit.
Mm.
He sees right through it. And that's where his rebellion comes from. He refuses to play their game.
Which makes me wonder, is this phony thing still relevant today?
Totally. I mean, think about it. The pressure to conform, social media facades. It's like Holden's nightmare come to life.
He'd be calling everyone out left and right.
For sure. Okay, so the source also mentions that Salinger himself experienced World War II firsthand. He even witnessed the events at Normandy.
Wow. Yeah, that's heavy stuff. Do you think that shaped Holden's cynicism?
The source definitely suggests that. Imagine witnessing that kind of violence, that loss. It would make you question everything.
And maybe lose faith in humanity a little.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes sense that Holden, as Salinger's creation, would inherit some of that disillusionment.
Especially towards the adults who sent young men off to war.
Right, like they're the ones who created this mess, and they're the ones who call the shots.
And it connects to that fear of falling that the source mentioned.
Oh, yeah, literally and metaphorically, right. Falling into adulthood, losing that innocence.
That's why he wants to be the catcher in the rye. It's all about saving kids from that fall.
Exactly. From becoming those phonies he despises so much. It's tragic, really.
And hopeful, in a way, right? Like, he still believes in something good.
You're right. There's a glimmer of hope there, for sure.
So, okay, the source mentions that Catcher in the Rye was revolutionary in terms of first-person narration.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. It's like Holden's just talking directly to you.
But why was that such a big deal back then?
Well, before Catcher, this style of narration, where you're right inside the character's head, it wasn't really explored this way.
So it felt really real and immediate.
Exactly. And this authenticity had a massive impact. The source even says it directly influenced authors like Sylvia Plath.
Like her novel, The Bell Jar.
Exactly. And countless others, too.
But that realism also led to some controversy.
Oh, yeah. Big time. The book was banned, challenged, all that.
People weren't ready for Holden's unfiltered voice.
His take on sex, rebellion, it was a lot for some people.
Do you think it's still controversial today?
That's a good question. I mean, some things that shocked readers back then might seem tame now.
But the themes of alienation, mental health.
Yeah, those are timeless and still relevant.
Okay, now for the curveball, the source compares Catcher in the Rye to Dune.
Giant sandworms and prep school angst. That's a head scratcher.
Right. So what's the connection?
Well, it boils down to rebellion, but on completely different scales.
Like Holden's rebellion is personal.
And Paul Atreides, in Dune, his rebellion is, well, galactic.
Whoa, that's a big difference.
It is. But it highlights how coming-of-age stories can be told in any genre.
Makes you think, huh. Okay, now for the even weirder one.
Hit me with it.
The source links Catcher in the Rye to the movie Conspiracy Theory.
Mel Gibson, right?
Yeah. So in the film, the main character is obsessed with Catcher.
Really? But why?
Well, it ties into some dark stuff, mind control experiment.
That's pretty intense.
It is. And the source suggests that the filmmakers chose Catcher for a reason. It's got those real-world associations.
Like Mark David Chapman and John Lennon?
Exactly. So the film uses the book to tap into these anxieties about mind control, paranoia.
It's like the book itself becomes this symbol of something unsettling.
Right. And it makes you wonder why this book, out of all the books out there, has become so connected to these dark ideas.
It's fascinating how a work of fiction can take on a life of its own like that.
Totally agree. But, you know, despite all that, The Catcher in the Rye is ultimately about something very human.
What do you mean?
It's about feeling lost, trying to find your place in the world, yearning for something real.
And that's something we can all relate to, right?
Exactly. Whether you're a teenager, an adult, or somewhere in between, those feelings are universal.
You know, The Source specifically mentions the book's impact on how we talk about mental health.
Yeah, Holden's struggles feel so real.
And back then, it wasn't really something people talked about openly. But Catcher helped change that.
It gave a voice to those who were struggling.
And it encourages us to be more understanding, more compassionate.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, Holden might be cynical and all, but he's also deeply sensitive.
And vulnerable.
Yeah. He's hurting. And he's trying to figure things out, just like the rest of us.
It's a reminder that we're not alone in our struggles.
Right. And that maybe, just maybe, there's still hope for something better.
A little bit of light in all that darkness.
Exactly. But hey, we've only scratched the surface here.
We've got more to uncover.
Oh yeah, we've got a whole bunch of other coming-of-age novels to compare this to, and we're diving even deeper into the sci-fi world next time.
Sounds like a plan. Can't wait.
Me neither. So, until next time, keep those pages turning.
And those minds open.
See you
later. Welcome back to our deep dive into The Catcher in the Rye. Remember how we were talking about Holden's struggles with mental health?
Yeah, how they still feel so relevant today.
Exactly. Like Holden's voice just cuts through time.
It's like he's speaking directly to us, even now.
And that's what makes great literature, right? It transcends time and place.
Totally agree. So The Sources make some interesting comparisons to other works, like Rebel Without a Cause.
Oh yeah, the James Dean classic.
Right. I mean, they both deal with teenage angst, but what are the deeper connections?
Well, both Holden and Jim Stark, Dean's character, they feel so alienated from the adult world.
Like they just don't fit in.
Exactly. And they see all this hypocrisy around them, all these phonies, as Holden would say.
And that leads to rebellion.
Right, but they rebel in different ways.
Yeah,
Holden's rebellion is more internal, right?
You got it. He's constantly criticizing others, but he's also really hard on himself.
Like he's fighting this inner battle.
Exactly. He's trying to figure out who he is, but he's terrified of becoming a phony himself.
Whereas Jim Stark, his rebellion is much more outward.
Yeah, he acts out, gets into fights, takes risks.
It's a very different kind of rebellion, but it's still rooted in that same feeling of alienation.
Absolutely. And, you know, both stories also explore those messy family dynamics.
Oh, yeah. Holden's relationship with his parents is pretty strained.
And he idealizes his sister, Phoebe.
Sees her as the symbol of innocence.
Right. And in Rebel Without a Cause, Jim's relationship with his parents is, well,
dysfunctional is putting it mildly.
Yeah, for sure. He feels totally misunderstood by them.
Which contributes to his rebellious behavior.
Like a vicious cycle, right? And even the settings of the stories play a role.
Oh, yeah. Holden wandering through New York City.
Feeling lost and alone, even though he's surrounded by millions of people.
That's such a powerful image of alienation.
It is. And Rebel Without a Cause, even though it's set in the suburbs,
it still has that feeling of unease.
Yeah, like something's not quite right beneath the surface.
Okay, and remember how we talked about the comparison to Dune?
Giant sandworms and Holden Caulfield? I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one.
Me too. But The Sources say it's about rebellion, just on different scales.
So Holden wants to protect kids from the phony adult world.
Right, that whole Catcher in the Rye thing.
And Paul Atreides and Dune, he's thrust into this world of galactic conflict.
So they're both dealing with the loss of innocence, but in these vastly different contexts.
Exactly. And both of them have to grapple with leadership.
Holden in this idealized way, wanting to lead kids away from corruption.
And Paul, he's destined to become this powerful leader.
It's amazing how those themes can play out in such different genres.
It is. You know, one thing that surprised me in The Source was that Catcher in the Rye isn't actually a stream of consciousness novel.
Really? But Holden's narration feels so free-flowing.
It does, right. But it's more structured than true stream of consciousness.
Like, there's still a timeline, a coherent story.
Exactly. It's more about capturing the way teenagers think, with all their digressions and emotional intensity.
So Salinger found this balance between realism and literary technique.
Exactly. And the impact on other writers is undeniable.
Oh, yeah. The Source talks about how it revolutionized first-person narration.
Holden Caulfield's voice was so fresh, so authentic. It opened up new possibilities.
And it tackled some taboo subjects, too.
Teenage sexuality, depression, things people didn't really talk about openly back then.
It definitely pushed boundaries, but the influence goes beyond just literature.
Oh, absolutely. Think about music, film, art. Holden Caulfield has become this iconic figure.
The symbol of teenage angst.
And that red hunting hat. Instantly recognizable.
It's like he's become this larger-than-life representation of the desire for something real.
In a world that often feels fake. It's pretty amazing.
Totally agree. So we've talked about comparisons to other works, but what about the Bildungsroman genre itself?
Yes. The novel of formation, or education novel, as they say.
Can you break that down for us?
Sure. Basically, it's a story that follows a protagonist from youth to adulthood, focusing on their psychological and moral growth.
And Catcher is a classic example, right?
Absolutely. Holden Caulfield, even though he's kind of an unconventional protagonist, his journey is all about grappling with those challenges of growing up.
Making mistakes, learning from those experiences.
Exactly. And the beauty of the Bildungsroman is that it can encompass so many different kinds of stories.
Like To Kill a Mockingbird is a great example.
Oh, yeah. Scout Finch's journey is so powerful.
And then you have The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Huck's journey down the Mississippi is both literal and metaphorical.
And even the Harry Potter series.
A coming-of-age story in a magical world.
Exactly. It shows that these themes are universal.
They really are. Okay, so The Source also lists some books that demonstrate strong character development, even if they don't fit the traditional Bildungsroman mold.
It's interesting. So coming of age isn't the only way characters can change and grow.
Right. Character development can happen in any genre.
Okay, so what are some examples?
Well, think about Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, a classic.
Both Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy, they go through such significant changes.
They challenge their own prejudices, learn from their mistakes.
And it's not just about romantic love, it's about personal growth.
Yeah, Elizabeth is such a strong, independent character.
Exactly. And then you have A Tale of Two Cities.
Another classic.
Sidney Carton, he starts out pretty self-destructive.
But he finds redemption through sacrifice.
It's such a powerful transformation. These examples show how character development can really elevate a story.
It makes us think about our own capacity for change.
Exactly. Okay, ready to get back to those sci-fi coming-of-age novels.
Oh, yeah, bring on the spaceships and aliens. We left off with Ender's Game.
Right. A classic example of how sci-fi can use fantastical settings to explore real human experiences.
Like the pressures of leadership, the moral dilemmas of war.
And all within this young boy's journey towards adulthood.
Exactly. What about A Wrinkle in Time?
Another great one. It's more whimsical, but still deals with those big themes.
Family, courage, the power of love, all wrapped up in this cosmic adventure.
And it's a reminder that even in the vastness of the universe, our connections with others matter most.
Okay, and we can't forget The Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah. Katniss Everdeen. She became such a symbol of rebellion.
And it tackles those big social issues, too.
Social injustice, political corruption. It's a powerful story about fighting for what's right.
Even when the odds are stacked against you.
Exactly. And another example of sci-fi tackling social issues is Divergent.
Where society is divided into factions based on personality.
Right. And Beatrice Pryor, the protagonist, she doesn't fit in.
She becomes a threat to the established order.
It's a story about self-discovery and challenging societal norms.
Finding the courage to be yourself, even if it means facing persecution.
And it's interesting how a lot of these sci-fi coming-of-age stories feature protagonists who are outsiders.
Mm. Like they don't fit into the neat boxes society tries to put them in.
And they challenge those boxes. They rebel.
Which I think is why these stories resonate with so many readers.
We've all felt that way at some point, right? Like, we don't belong.
Exactly. And sci-fi gives us this safe space to explore those feelings.
To imagine different possibilities, different ways of being.
Okay, what about Slaughterhouse-Five? That's a classic, too.
Oh, Vonnegut. He's brilliant, but challenging.
Definitely. The way he blends science fiction and satire to explore the horrors of war.
It's powerful stuff. And it shows how coming of age isn't always a linear process.
Sometimes it's about confronting trauma, dealing with loss.
And finding a way to make sense of a world that often feels senseless.
That's a really profound point. We've only scratched the surface of this list of sci-fi novels, but
I think it's time to bring our focus back to Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, let's talk about its legacy.
Because even though it was written over 70 years ago,
it still feels so relevant today.
It captures those timeless feelings of alienation, of searching for something real.
And those feelings are universal, regardless of age.
You're right. And that's why Catcher in the Rye continues to be such an important book.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us think, challenges our perspectives.
And reminds us of the power of empathy.
Exactly. It all started with this teenage boy who just wanted to save kids from falling.
That image of the catcher in the rye, it's so simple, yet so powerful.
It speaks to that fear of losing our innocence, the desire to hold on to something pure.
And that desire, that yearning, it resonates with all of us.
It does. And that brings us to the end of this part of our deep dive. But we've got more to explore.
Oh, yeah. We're going even deeper into the legacy of The Catcher in the Rye next time.
And we'll keep uncovering those connections to other works, both classic and contemporary.
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, keep those pages turning.
And those minds open.
See you in part three. All right. Welcome back to our deep dive on The Catcher in the Rye. We've covered a lot of ground, but before we wrap things up,
we've still got those sci-fi coming-of-age novels to explore.
Right. Remember that list of 20 we barely scratched the surface of? I'm ready for some mind-bending adventures.
Me too. And you know how we were talking about protagonists who are outsiders?
Yeah, like they don't fit in with the norms.
Well, Neuromancer by William Gibson takes that idea to a whole other level.
Oh yeah, Neuromancer.
Cyberpunk classic, right?
Exactly. It's a wild ride set in this future where technology and humanity are totally blurred.
I can only imagine. What's the story about?
So it follows this guy named Case, a washed-up hacker who gets this chance at redemption through a super dangerous mission in cyberspace.
Cyberspace. So it's like a virtual reality kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's so much more than that in Gibson's world. It's like a whole other reality, just as real as the physical world.
That's trippy. So where's the coming of age part in all of this?
Well, Case's journey is all about facing his past, overcoming his limitations. It's a classic transformation story.
But with a cyberpunk twist.
Right. Like, he's finding a sense of purpose in this world that's basically rejected him.
Mm. That's really interesting. It's like, even in this dark, futuristic world, those core coming-of-age themes still resonate.
Totally. Okay, so another mind-blowing one is The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin.
I've heard of that one. It's about gender, right?
Yeah. It's set on this planet where the people don't have a fixed gender, or ambisexual.
Ambisexual, so like they can be male or female.
It's not quite that simple. Their gender isn't determined at birth, it's fluid.
Wow, that's a whole different way of thinking about gender. I bet that makes for a fascinating coming of age story.
It does. The protagonist, Genly AI, he's from Earth, and he has a really hard time wrapping his head around Gathenian culture.
Like it challenges everything he thought he knew about gender.
Exactly. And it's not just about gender. It's about how we relate to each other, how we form connections.
That's pretty deep. Okay, what else have we got?
Well, for something completely different, there's Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler.
Oh, Octavia Butler. She's amazing. I've been meaning to read that one.
It's a must read for sure. It's dystopian, set in a future where everything's gone wrong.
Climate change, social unrest, all that.
Yep, all of that. And the protagonist, Lauren Olamina, she has this condition called hyperempathy.
Hyper-empathy, so she can feel other people's emotions.
Even more than that, she physically feels their pain, and she ends up leading a group of refugees who are trying to survive.
It sounds really intense, but hopeful too, right? Like they're fighting for a better future.
Exactly. It's about resilience, community, and the power of hope, even in the darkest of times.
I love that. Okay, so we've touched on a few of these sci-fi coming-of-age novels, but...
But I think it's time to bring it back to Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, let's wrap things up with some final thoughts on its legacy.
Because it's amazing how this book, written over 70 years ago, can still feel so fresh and relevant.
It really is. Holden Caulfield's struggles, his search for something real, it's something that resonates with people across generations.
And even though the world has changed so much since the 1950s, those core themes of alienation, authenticity,
they're still so relatable.
Exactly. And that's what makes Catcher in the Rye such an enduring work of literature. It makes you think, challenges your perspectives, and it stays with you long after you've finished reading it.
It's a book that sparks conversations and makes you question the world around you.
And it all started with this one teenage boy who just wanted to save kids from falling.
That image, The Catcher in the Rye, it's so haunting, yet so hopeful.
It represents that yearning for innocence, that desire to protect something pure and good.
And I think that resonates with all of us on some level. So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what final thoughts would you leave our listeners with?
I'd say go back and read Catcher in the Rye again, but this time, think about how Holden's journey connects to your own experiences. How has the world changed since the book was written? And how have those themes of alienation and authenticity evolved? What does it mean to be a phony in today's world?
Those are some great questions to ponder. And hey, while you're at it, maybe check out some of those other coming-of-age stories we've talked about, whether it's A Separate Piece or The Hunger Games or even Neuromancer.
There's a whole world of stories out there waiting to be discovered.
Exactly. And each one offers a unique perspective on what it means to grow up, to face challenges, and to find your place in the world.
So keep exploring, keep questioning, and most importantly, keep reading.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into The Catcher in the Rye. Until next time, keep those pages turning and those minds open.
See you on our next adventure.
Take care.